Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm your host, Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann. Billions of pounds of perfectly good food goes wasted every year in America. 40% of food gets thrown out, and most of it will end up in landfills. The issue has generated so much concern that U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack has a goal to cut the amount of food waste in half by 2030. In the studio today is the McCormick Professor of Agriculture Marketing and Policy in the Department of Agriculture, Environmental and Development Economics at Ohio State University, Brian Rowe. Brian, welcome.
Thanks.
That's some long title you have there. But you deserve that title, I'm sure. You recently published a study about food waste in the U.S. Now, before your research, how much did we really know about consumer waste when it comes to food?
There were a few studies in the United States and more studies internationally about food waste. But we only had one representative view of the United States in terms of consumers' awareness and attitudes towards food waste, and our study provided a follow-up look on that.
How did you conduct that study then?
We worked with a large polling firm and talked to 500 randomly selected people around the United States by phone. So we got a nice random representation, made sure to get everybody open to participate in the survey, and then offer them a small incentive to participate and participate in the phone survey.
Well, what did you find?
We found that awareness was of the food waste issue was still fairly low. Just over half of the people in the United States that responded to our phone survey were aware of the topic. Once we got them into that, we found some interesting attitudes. We found that over three quarters of the people said they felt guilty when they threw away food, but yet only about half thought they really could do anything to reduce food waste further in their own homes.
And why do you think they feel that way? I mean, what's wrong with the attitudes or our buying habits at the grocery store that this is leading to food waste?
Yeah, I think guilt is pretty natural when you're throwing things away like that. I think it comes from warnings from our parents and things like that that tell us not to waste in general. And so I think that's kind of internalized for a lot of folks in our study. I think people haven't thought too deeply about it. For example, when we asked them, did they think that food waste had an environmental impact? Not that many agreed. Only about 70% agreed with that statement, less than that, in fact. And so they weren't quite putting together that food waste has an environmental impact.
So why do you think there's such a disconnect in this?
I think people think when they're throwing away food, it's very natural. So it's a natural process. And they don't think the next step beyond that it typically goes into the landfill. And that causes methane, which is 30 times more damaging than CO2 in terms of greenhouse gas impacts. Nor do they think about, oh yeah, all the water, all the energy, all the transportation, all the time that went into creating the food to get it to my plate in the first place.
You talked about the fact that Americans feel guilty about throwing away this type of food. What do you suggest, or did you suggest when you were talking to these folks, how they could lower that amount they throw away? Or was this strictly you informing them about food waste and their attitudes toward it?
Yeah, we were just trying to get a viewpoint of how they were viewing the situation. And so we asked them their attitudes, their kind of agreement with different statements about food waste. And so we asked them how they thought it related to foodborne illness, how it related to their own household finances, how they thought it stacked up against other people that are in similar households to themselves.
And did they give reasons why they thought they wasted food?
Yeah. One reason we asked them, did they agree with the statement that throwing away food after the label date is passed would reduce the odds of foodborne illness? And many, many people agreed, about 70% agreed. And as we know that the dates on most foods have very little to do about safety, they're mainly to do about quality.
But I think people don't think that way. They look at that and you're right. They think sell by date, it's that date, it's gone because I'll be sick.
Yeah. Studies have suggested that the date labeling is one place that we can make a big improvement in terms of reducing the amount of food wasted in homes.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, and we'd like to hear from our listeners. How do you keep food waste to a minimum? Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. In terms of the economics of food waste, then, Brian, how does it impact the consumer and the food industry at large?
Yeah, it's a lot of value being thrown away each year. USDA when they did these estimates for the 2010 year, they found it's about $161 billion, billion with a B, dollars thrown away each year. That's about $500 per person per year being thrown out in terms of the value of food. So that's a lot of money on the table.
And what is being thrown out most? Is it produce? Because that seems to go quicker, you know, even if it's kept in a refrigerator, it doesn't have preservatives and all those things. What are people throwing away?
Yeah, fish, meat, animal proteins in general, it's about 30% of the food that's wasted. Vegetables, right around 20%, and dairies close behind, right around 15 to 17% of the food being wasted.
How do we get the information to people about the labels and the packaging and information, sell by doesn't mean don't eat by and things like that? Because I think maybe in the past we didn't have those safeguards in place as far as food safety goes. So people still think that it's that way, that, you know, unless we eat it by this date, we are going to get sick.
Yeah, there was legislation introduced into the U.S. House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate in May where they're trying to clarify the label dates through an act of Congress and work that way. They're trying to identify quality versus safety dates on labels. It was introduced. It's been referred to committee, so it's in the Congress is on break now. So it'll be interesting to see if this rises as a priority on the legislative side come next year.
And again, it's consumer habit, so we would see how long it takes for people to really believe what they see then.
Yeah.
I read in the New York Times that, quote, retailers, wholesalers, and food service companies may reject entire semi-trailers of produce if they spot a single crushed box or carton. I could not believe that. And I have to believe that it not only does the cost add up, but what a waste of what could be really good food in the rest of the truck.
Yeah. So there's been a move towards acceptance of what's known as ugly food. France was one of the first countries to require retailers to make sure that food that was edible didn't merely get thrown away. Something had to be done with it. And there are private and NGO initiatives around the U.S. trying to do the same thing to kind of have consumers embrace ugly food that doesn't meet cosmetic standards but is still perfectly fine. But we also have to be careful when we actually look at the data. While it's easy to pick out these examples from retailers and from restaurants, most of the food waste in the U.S. comes back to our own behaviors in our own household or our own behavior in the front of restaurants and when we go out to eat.
That brings up a good point. You talked about talking to consumers in this research poll about how they felt and what they did with food waste. What about restaurants? Did you talk to any owners of restaurants in this survey?
No, this is only consumers. But when we look at the data from USDA and EPA and others, it squarely points a finger at us in our own homes being the ones that are creating most of the food waste. Residential waste is pitched to be about 44% of food waste comes from our own behavior in our own house, with 20% from full-service restaurants and a little bit less in terms of percentages from quick serve restaurants. So it's us in the home that really are the first ones that need to do something about that.
And I'm so surprised at that because I eat in restaurants like everyone else and I see some of these huge portions. And we've talked about portion control being an issue in areas of obesity and things, but food waste as well. And so these restaurants, even though they're serving all this food, they don't end up being the biggest culprit.
Not the biggest, but obviously there are gains to be made there in terms of reduction of food waste. So there is progress that can be made there. And in fact, there are some restaurants out there that are doing novel things, such as you pay full price for your meal. They only give you 2/3 of the quantity of it. And then the equivalent of that 1/3 is then donated to a hunger charity.
Well, we're going to take a phone call now. Let's see. This is hi, Beth. You're on the air. Your question?
Hi. I have two comments. One is that in Colorado, they're doing a novel procedure. They're taking all the vegetables and fruits that would go into the landfill, and they have a special green incinerator that harvests the methane and then converts it into gas that is used for the gas companies. So I wanted to share that. And also... you know, please, I just want to say something about quickly. Nancy's used to be able to give all their food to the homeless. And for some reason, at the end of the day, when they were finishing their shifts, and for some reason, They said that the health code inspectors said that they were no longer able to do that. And it's just, it breaks their heart. It breaks my heart. And they'll give me like chicken noodles or whatever they have in a big container for free. Like, it's overflowing. And I just wanted to share that because there are businesses that want to donate the leftover food, but in that situation, not really sure why. So I will listen to you on the radio.
All right, Beth. Thank you. Interesting. What kind of regulations do restaurants have to follow then, Brian, when it comes to reusing or not even reusing, but it's perfectly good food?
Yeah, there's efforts right now to try to reform liability and legal issues surrounding donation of food.
And so that's mostly what it's about, legal?
Yeah. In fact, Harvard just put on a huge conference focusing on legal aspects of repurposing food in situations similar to this, trying to break down the barriers, that legal barriers that keep restaurants from being able to make this donations, as she was talking about. I think the more interesting thing that this point brings up, though, is the thinking about the hierarchy of responses to food waste. And so the caller spoke about diverting food from landfills and also then repurposing food. And there's a very strong hierarchy. First, we want to try to reduce food waste in general to not make it in the first place, because that saves all the resources that went into the food. And then repurposing it to other humans, that's the next best thing to do. To be able to use it in its appropriate form. And then moving down lower to the list is something like repurposing it to try to make gas out of it that can be recovered for energy production. And then obviously landfilling is the worst outcome that food can meet if it's not being eaten.
Are we tracking the business side then of food waste, restaurants or anywhere else when it comes, you know, grocery stores everywhere?
Yeah, there are some data tracking that. BSR is a consulting firm that's worked with EPA, and they'll occasionally go out and try to estimate the amount of food waste being produced at each of the different portions of the supply chain. And so we've got some decent data from several years ago, but this is a rapidly changing area. I think practices are changing, and so it'll be interesting to see when the next research comes out concerning this.
BJ, you're on the air. Your comment, please.
Yeah, hi. I save food, I guess, by composting, but also when I buy produce, it will die in the plastic bag. So I don't even take the plastic bag. I just take it to the checkout plane. When I get home, I wash it, I drain it, and I put it in the crisper with a towel over it on humid, and it stays way longer. And then just, you know, every week when I shop, I kind of redo it, but it keeps the produce fresh. And I would also recommend to people not to throw it in the trash, but if they don't compost, they could put it down the disposer. It's probably better than the trash.
BJ, thank you. I don't know what you know about disposing of it, but as far as keeping produce longer,
sure.
that's everybody wants to know secrets to that.
Yeah. I think there's a renaissance in terms of home economics, understanding how to manage the household, how to buy appropriately, how to store appropriately. And that's what's needed to address this issue. US EPA has a campaign called Food Too Good to Waste that has a whole bevy of interesting ideas and hints about how to maintain food. Some of the items that the caller mentioned are clearly in that area, trying to store food appropriately, wash it, prep it, maybe even cook it first and then store it for later use, making sure to wash your berries only when you're going to eat them so the mold doesn't form more quickly. Lots of small hints are now being organized into these campaigns that are being used around communities in the United States to try to reduce food waste.
And just letting people know about food waste, which is the beginning of that whole process, I suppose, trying to raise awareness.
Yeah, exactly. As we said, only a little more than half of the U.S. is really aware of that topic. So there's plenty of room for learning, growth, change.
Coming up, we continue our conversation about food waste in America, and we'll hear about what's being done in Central Ohio to mitigate the problem. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Gail Hogan in for Ann Fisher. The world population is now growing by 80 million a year and is expected to reach 9 billion by 2050. That means the global demand for food will increase by about 70%. Yet today in the U.S., nearly half of Americans are discarding perfectly good food, and it's adding up in the landfill and in the environment. Still with us is agriculture economics professor at OSU, Brian Rowe. Joining us is the Director of Innovation and Programs at the Solid Waste Authority of Central Ohio, Kyle O'Keefe. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you.
And the principal chief consultant and dumpster diver of Good Land Sustainability, a consulting firm in Columbus, Mike Minix. Welcome to you, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's take a look at where food is going to waste. And we're going to go down the food chain, if you don't mind. Let's start with agriculture. After all, you know, the farms, it's where it all begins anyway. So, and Mike, I'll start with you. What kind of waste are we seeing there?
Well, I think we've all seen it in the news a little bit now. It's ugly food. Stuff that doesn't meet the standards that grocery stores or the consumer has in their mind. They know they can't sell it, or they think they can't sell it. So we're looking at a lot of countries in Europe that are now having these ugly food movements. And when we say ugly food, it might be a tomato that has
a bump on it.
A bump.
Yeah.
Just something a little tiny like a bump. I grow tomatoes. The vast majority of them do have bumps on them. Very rarely do they come out looking perfect. So you can just imagine the amount of food that's going to waste right there.
So what do those programs mean in Europe? How do they go about doing this so that – and then they change, you know, consumer thought processes about it.
You know, I think it's very similar to the way they currently do it. They just offer it at a discounted price instead of letting it rot in the fields.
That sounds like it's a viable thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, not too different from what they're currently doing. But, I mean, it's just the consumer has this mindset of what a vegetable needs to look like. And they'll pass over. If you go to a farmer's market and one of those has a little bump on it, it might be the last one picked, but it still tastes the same.
And that's where we talk about consumer education. And you had said that earlier, Brian. You know, it took us a long time to get here looking at these beautiful pictures and magazines and things of what we expect our fruits and vegetables to look like, our meat products. How do we get people to change their mindsets?
I think it's getting them to just reconsider it. It does taste just as good with that bump on it. Or perhaps at the farm level, just having another ability to divert that to process where it gets all smushed up and made into
sauces,
into the tomato
or
paste,
something.
Exactly. And so the cosmetic portion of it isn't quite as important.
According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, 20% of what goes into municipal landfills is food. So, Kyle, do you see similar figures at SWECO?
Yeah, actually, we do. Earlier this year, we actually just put out a little report, and what we found was about 12.8% of what comes to our landfill in Franklin County, generated by Franklin County businesses and residents, is food waste. So ultimately, that equates to almost 130,000 tons of food waste a year that's sent to our landfill.
And people would think, well, that's the stuff that's composted so easily. So is it really a problem? It's not plastics, you know, it's not steel and metal.
Landfills are one of the largest emitters of methane nationally, globally, which is one of our most harmful greenhouse gases as well. So we're fortunate at the Franklin County landfill to actually collect a lot of that methane. We actually clean it and we actually turn it into usable gas. But still, a lot of this food waste can be diverted and used for better applications for our community.
And are you seeing an increase or decrease in the amount of food coming to the landfill?
It's remained relatively steady. Now, there are some composting and food waste reduction programs taking place in Central Ohio. But still, the bulk of it, really what we're doing is probably about 5% of the total amount of food waste being generated is being diverted currently from the landfill. So there's still a long ways to go. You could say 95% is yet to be captured or dealt with in
Wow.
some better way.
Sean from Columbus, you're on the air. Your comment, please.
Yeah, we talked earlier about the fear of litigation with regard to donation of food. And I'm not really sure where that comes from. I mean, I can imagine where it comes from. But the reality is there's never been a successful case ever against somebody who donated food and their liability with regard to making somebody sick or anything like that. It just never happened.
Mike?
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it's, again, the mindset corporate-wide fear of litigation. There was something passed, I believe it was 96, called the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Act, where any food donation, anybody donating food is not liable for anybody getting sick after the food. It's the responsibility of the food bank or food donation program to check those things. So once you've handed it off to them and signed it off, you are anybody is not liable for that food. Hmm. And I think that's a great option. I would hope to see more and more caterers, restaurants, cafeterias using programs like this.
And there's a program right here in Columbus, Community Plates, which you're probably aware of, and maybe you know more about it than I do, but there's a nice handy app that you can go online and sign in and make a food delivery from somebody who wants to donate to somebody who wants the donation.
Yeah, you said it takes just some organization on the upfront and getting the proper partners in place before an event happens. I mean, even this coming weekend on the 20th, there is a social entrepreneur festival at McPherson Commons called Sea Change, the Sea Change Festival. And we'll be donating all the food that's uneaten to local food banks.
And you've already planned it, knowing ahead of time that this is going to happen. And that's what you say about taking that step initially beforehand so that you know what's happening.
Yes.
To do. We got an interesting email from Sarah. She says, I live in an area where I am able to keep a small flock of chickens who will eat nearly everything. I rarely find myself throwing away good food, but any trimmings as well as old leftovers become recycled into fresh eggs. So we all don't have that ability to have chickens in our backyard. So how do we get rid of it other ways, Kyle, environmentally, if we don't have chickens in our backyard?
Yeah. Well, to her point, feeding animals is actually one of the better uses for food waste that can't be consumed by humans. And in fact, a lot of the food waste that's generated and diverted in Franklin County actually goes to farms. There's some 3,000 tons of food waste that is actually taken to farms around Franklin County and used to feed livestock. And that's actually one of the better uses for it. Puts it back into the food cycle and food chain.
Do we have any idea percentage-wise how much this is?
Oh, I'd say it's probably 2 or 3% of the total amount of food waste generated in Franklin County.
So we basically still have a lot to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Correct. This is All Science with Ann Fisher. We'd like to hear from our listeners. How do you keep food waste to a minimum? Give us a call at 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mike, we talked about a little bit restaurants being able to take some of this food to shelters and other things. What else can they do with those leftovers?
Well, I'd say number one would be donate if it's edible food scrap. And I look at food waste and food scrap as sort of two different places. There's the pre-consumer, which is the trimmings, the cutoffs of prepared food. The second being post-consumer, so after it's scraping plates. Obviously, Kyle and I have talked a lot about there's a lot more control when you talk about pre-consumer. But honestly, it's having a plan, and a lot of restaurants have been great. You know, the leadership at Sweco has been wonderful over the past, with the new coming, team there. They just have to want to do it. And I find a lot of small restaurateurs and even large universities, they want to do these things. They're looking for solutions. They want people to do it. It's the logistical problems that we've been facing and lack of businesses that do pick up. It's out there. I mean, if they want to compost it, they can compost it.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned working with Sweco, and I'm interested in finding out how many other organizations all work together to try to solve this problem. Do you see a lot of folks doing that, wanting to come together?
I'll jump in there. Yeah, absolutely. There are a lot of folks coming together. There are cities, there are villages, there are local government organizations, nonprofit groups, individuals, all committed to finding ways to reduce food waste. That's something we're seeing on the radar. We were just speaking a moment ago about the Local Food Action Plan, which is something that's being developed. And one of the four main aspects of that is how do we reduce food waste in Franklin County? So there's policy being looked at, and we really think that this is a huge opportunity for Franklin County as a whole in the future. I know, speaking from Sweco's standpoint, over the next year here, we're looking to really engage a lot of stakeholders, bring in some outside help, but really provide a voice for the community and figure out what kind of infrastructure is really required. As Mike mentioned, infrastructure is one of the bigger barriers here. We really have a lack of composting food waste technology accessible in Central Ohio. It's one of the bigger challenges. And so part of that is just the proper planning for it. It's, what kind of space, what kind of equipment, what kind of other inputs do you need, and how do you make it financially viable and beneficial to the community. So that's what we'll be looking at.
And next week on Friday, August 26th, we'll be having a large conference here to help to stimulate communities and organizations thinking about their own food waste reduction and diversion plans. We'll be having speakers in nationally, people from all over the state of Ohio who are interested in pursuing these types of policies to help them start up their own, learn facts about trends of food waste programs, and then kind of hit the road running with ideas about how they can overcome the barriers that they're facing in their own communities to these logistical issues.
So, Mike, we're starting. We're going in the right direction. But is part of the problem been, in the States anyway, most people haven't had to worry about food. We've always had enough food. If, you know, there are obviously some who don't have that dinner on the table every evening. But for the most part, as a nation, we've been able to grow everything we need. And that's part of the problem.
Well, I think we like to think that there are so many, there are many, many people that you don't hear about that are food insecure here and even in the city. And a lot of things that we do grow are, they're not necessarily the most edible food. So when we're looking at like things like tomatoes, are a lot of them grown locally? No. We have a lot of corn and we got a lot of soybean in this state. And I don't want to speak as an agriculturalist because I'm not, but it's just from what I'm seeing sort of from the restaurant side, I don't think everybody has enough to eat here. And that's the sad part I feel when I see a lot of this food scrap going out.
I guess I meant the people that throw it away don't think twice about it because they think it's going to always be there.
It changes the mindset when they do start collecting food scrap. So I've worked with some large food service providers here in the city, and when they initially started food scrap diversion programs, it was massive amounts. And then they started to see basically just the money trickling out of there through the waste. And that was what really changed their minds and helped them start, you know, being a little bit better about how they serve, how they save, how they reduce their waste from the front end.
In the survey that we did, people said that if the prices were to go up, they would probably waste less food. So there seems to be sensitivity. If food is cheap, why not waste it? If you really don't want to eat that leftover and it was cheap to begin with, I'm just going to toss it and move on to something more interesting.
And there are so many just variable costs to a tomato, from the cost of fuel to transport it and all of these things. So we've been lucky with the cost of gas. I have been very lucky.
As we all have.
But those prices will inevitably rise on that same tomato, and it'll just continue to fluctuate for eternity. And that's just how it'll work. But you're going to start seeing this as a cost savings measure in a lot of these operations here in the future, I believe.
In fact, you said, Mike, that was one way that restaurants keep some of the waste to a minimum is because they're in business to make money.
Yeah. So if you look up and down the food chain, it's the household that has the most uneven, if you will, profit or cost motive. Every other part of the food chain, they're a profit-driven business, and they're going to mine the store and try to minimize waste to the best of their ability. Households, if they're food insecure or economically disadvantaged, they may penny pinch and be very cautious about food waste. Those of us who might have more income and are more interested in saving time than money, that's probably where the food waste is going to be the greatest.
And some of the studies that have been done also show that a lot of the food waste that's generated is primarily coming from the households. You know, we often think of it in terms of restaurants and big generators, but majority of the food waste actually comes from the households. And your household, family of four, you know, 40% of that trash that you're throwing away could be made up of some sort of food waste. They say that, you know, families four typically in an annual year throw away $1,500 worth of food.
Wow. And Mike, that's what you found in your study too.
Yeah. But interestingly, only about 40% of the people that we talked to agreed that they thought food waste was a major source of financial waste in their own household. So I think a lot of that goes to them not having done that, setting aside the food waste, actually counting up the costs. And that's something that we're trying to address here at Ohio State. We're working to develop an app that would allow people to track the food that they waste in their own household. And
oh,
then,
wow, Brian, that's cool.
And then help them actually calculate how much money they're wasting every time they throw away some food.
So, that might be incentive that people need, that financial incentive.
When they see a dollar sign by it, it makes a whole heck of a difference. Mm-hmm. But even talking about the individual, the small business, and, you know, the large corporate business, there are different factors that'll go into each of these problems. They're not going to have the same problem throughout. So there's going to be no silver bullet to it. So we can look at it as an economical savings way or a sustainable, you know, program, but they're all going to be moving toward the same goal. And we have these multiple benefits for the same thing. For diverting food scrap from a landfill. We're going to save money. We're going to have more food. There are, you know, the benefits far outweigh, you know, the risk in a program like this.
Kyle, we're talking about costs. So what are the environmental costs of this? Is there a way to actually put figures on it?
There are. There's a lot of research being done right now that are putting figures on these amounts. I don't have them in front of me. But to Mike's point earlier, I mean, there's a lot of embedded energy that goes into creating food, to, you know, harvesting it, to transporting it, to processing it, to getting it on your plate. The cost that's equated with that is huge. I think, you know, part of the numbers that I've looked at is, you know, nationally, up to $165 billion in wasted energy cost associated with food waste annually is taking place in America. You know, and so there's a lot of opportunity here.
On the environmental side, I've seen the stat, maybe you have too. If you took food waste globally, it is it's the third largest country. If you equated a food waste to a country, it's the third largest country in terms of greenhouse gas emissions after China, the U.S., food waste, and then India.
And we're talking about waste in many different ways. I mean, think about that. But I think one of the most important ways is what you brought up earlier, Mike, and that we have to get some of the food that people have to the food to people who need it. Mm-hmm. And with all this food waste, you'd think there's got to be a way to do this. And I guess at the convention, Brian, those are some of the things you're going to look at besides the cost and environmental effects, how we can get it to the people who need it.
Yeah. Awareness, I think, is the first thing. People are unaware. They're uninformed. Just improved information will not be the silver bullet, but will make them more open to figuring out ways in their own life that they can make this happen, maybe demanding from those retailers and restaurants that they start taking action to do things on their end. Maybe they're open to ugly fruit. Maybe they're open to them donating their food to someplace else. So getting the consumer involved, I think, is a great first step, and I would argue a necessary step in order to make all the other parts of the supply chain kind of step up and do their part as well.
Coming up, we continue our conversation about food waste in the U.S. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Gail Hogan, in for Ann Fisher, and this hour we're talking about food waste in America. The problem stretches from the farm to the restaurant to the kitchen, our kitchens, resulting in environmental problems, billions in economic costs, and a lost opportunity to help feed the 50 million Americans who wonder where their next meal will come from. Still with us is agriculture economics professor at OSU, Brian Rowe. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks.
Also, principal chief consultant and dumpster diver of Good Land Sustainability, Mike Minix. Mike, welcome back again. And the director of innovation and programs at Solid Waste Authority of Central Ohio, Kyle O'Keefe. Thank you, too, Kyle, for being here. Mike, dumpster diver. Okay, let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah, let's rock and roll.
Do you really do this?
Yeah, you got to. I mean, when we do an audit on a facility, and we go and we see what they're throwing away, and we separate it, we weigh it. We help them reduce their costs while becoming more sustainable. You got to get in that dumpster. You got to get those big boots on, tie them up, put some gloves on.
Well, what do you do for companies? Obviously, you get in dumpsters to see, but what's your focus then to provide what information to them?
Well, it's a starting point. So when we do an audit, it's mainly gathering that information that I can use then to advise them on how they should then change their operations. And sometimes it's because they have just a dumpster out back. I've seen it a million times. They have a dumpster out back, and that's it. Municipal solid waste dumpster, I should say. But they're an office building, and the vast majority of what they throw away is paper. They could reduce their costs by having a recycling dumpster and reducing the size of their municipal solid waste dumpster. That, in theory, works the same way for a large-scale food service operation. The vast majority of what they're throwing away by weight and is organic material. And you could go to a cafeteria. The vast majority of what they're throwing away is either cardboard or any type of recyclable and food scrap. They have a very small amount of municipal solid waste. So by reducing the size of the trash dumpster, so to speak, they're going to be able to have some money left over to pay for recycling and sustainability programs. If we can offset the cost of these programs and not have it cost anybody any money. I call it cost-neutral environmentalism. Why wouldn't people want to do it?
Are these businesses, companies surprised at what you find?
In many cases, yeah. I mean, this is a dirty job. When I say dumpster diver, I wear it like a badge of honor. And all my friends are, if they are listening, they're laughing because we talk about this stuff. I love what I do. And sometimes when you're an architect or you're a director of a large-scale food service operation, you don't have time to go in the dumpster. Nobody has time to go in the dumpster because you got to put out good quality food often because you got 1,000 hungry kids running around like here on Ohio State campus. They need somebody like me to come in and check for them. And typically, even just knowing what type of operation they are, how many meals they serve, you can have a pretty good idea even before going in what I'm going to be seeing. But yeah, you got to get in there. You got to get in that dumpster just in case.
Does this mean people, Brian, should be checking their own garbage or their refrigerators and see what's in there and what shouldn't I be throwing away and what can I keep? And
yeah, the mere act of observing yourself often changes behavior. In England, there's a group known as RAP, WRAP, I forget the acronym, but they've done a lot of work in England trying to help people study their own food waste in their homes. And once people go through the diary and write down what they're throwing away, they'll go, oh my gosh, I really have to change this. And then no intervention is really needed. They just, by the mere act of observing themselves, they change.
Did I hear that in Seattle, they can't throw anything away? It's illegal to put food into trash cans.
There's a fine, a small fine, if you're caught throwing organic material into waste cans. However, a court there has ruled that fine illegal, and so it's in a bit of limbo status.
We talked about that food chain and the cost of transportation and all those sorts of things. Is there a way that we can cut down that? I know there are local restaurants that are even growing their own foods in order to cut down on the price of that. But are we seeing more of these kinds of efforts, Mike, Brian?
The Crest, for example, does a great job in using peelings and things like this to make soups and other entrees that really try to minimize their food waste. And I've been to several events that they've catered that focus on food waste, and they do a wonderful job being very conscious about that. They grow their own food there. So there is this gastro movement, I believe, of restaurants who are being very conscious on all fronts, food waste included.
Well, and another big strategy, I think, for local restaurateurs is to buy seasonal. To serve tomatoes in winter, you're not getting those local, but to have something like a fall squash on the menu. I know the Crest does a fantastic job, and there are examples of others. I grow vegetables for Market 65 here in town, and you said it. There is a huge movement, I think, because you're getting those higher quality products for cheaper than what you would from a distributor. And if you have the time and the effort and the expertise, you can have a big impact on your restaurant.
We have an email from Rashmi who says, we use Compost Columbus. We love the service. Kyle, you're familiar with this?
Yeah, Compost Columbus is a small startup business who's been, I think, in operation maybe 2 or 3 years now. And they will come to your home or business and they'll pick up your compost and they have a small compost pile where they incorporate that and manage it. And so there's a number of these smaller entrepreneurs looking to fill some niches in Central Ohio, and they're part of the solution. They're really trying to figure out what can we do to address this opportunity and providing a service. So there's a number of these small startups.
Is composting legal most places? Mike, you might know that, maybe. I mean, we don't know, Kyle. Can they do it?
Yeah. So you can basically have a compost pile. I mean, backyard composting is something – it's a great practice if folks have the ability and space to do that. Now, once a compost pile gets to a certain size, then you have to be classified and basically licensed as a compost facility. And there are certain requirements that come with that to make sure that, you're catching the liquids and everything else that are coming off the pile. But
so you have to be a good steward of your own compost.
Yes. And I think the size is 300 square feet. And if you're doing that in your backyard, you're going to have some issues with your neighbors a little more so than I think right. The city.
It's a little smaller. Let's go to consumer practices. When people shop for food, what ways can they minimize food waste when they're in the grocery store?
Yeah, one thing we found in our survey is that most people agreed that when they bought in bulk or they bought on sale, they were more likely to waste that food. And so it seems like a great bargain oftentimes when you buy things on sale.
People love to buy in bulk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest thing now in the U.S.
But if they actually tracked that food and found that they were wasting more of it on average, that might not be that big of a bargain if you end up throwing away a lot of the bulk or a lot of the sale items that you end up buying. So thinking critically about whether those bulk items, those on-sale items, they look cheap up front, but are you actually going to throw them away, and is it a bargain in the long run?
I always hear this. I've heard this a million times. You're eating with your eyes instead of your stomach. And people put
don't
so
go
much
to the grocery store hungry.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going for. You do. Because I buy far too much when I go there hungry, and I come home and I make a small meal. I mean, everybody's guilty of it at some point, but I've also overfilled plates with food. And, you know, after working in this business and doing these things for a long time, you really, as I heard earlier, you really start to notice. You know, you do some self-reflection. You realize that it's you're just wasting so much that somebody else could be eating, and you really want to change that. You really want to be a part of that.
That leads us, though, to education, and we've talked about that a little bit, and awareness. How can we achieve this, and what are we doing even locally to make sure that not just restaurants, but the average consumer knows about food waste?
There's a lot that needs to be done. You know, I think it's something that everybody can do and start practicing today, you know, to ways to reduce food waste, whether that is when you go to the store, planning ahead, thinking about what you'll need to eat this week, not shopping with your eyes and your stomach, but really thinking through it. But also, you know, there's a lot of techniques to just even when you eat out, you know, how can you bring home leftovers? You know, I even bring a small container for leftovers. You might get a few looks at first, but but it's still a good practice if you can do that. So there's a lot of things that consumers can do today to really address the food waste issue. You know, it's not all the lack of infrastructure for composting specifically, but a lot of it starts with our behaviors and being mindful.
And the Ad Council has finally taken this up as one of their issues as well. So if you would Google the extraordinary life and times of a strawberry, you'll see this really interesting video of how food waste happens in the average home, going all the way from the farm, all the way through the refrigerator, all the way into the garbage can. And so there is a push to increase awareness through places like the Ad Council.
And then what can consumers practice in their own kitchen to minimize it?
Yeah.
We talked about how they buy. What about their practices when they cook?
Yeah, so Food Too Good to Waste by US EPA has a great list of things. Most of it's about storage. Cooking, sure, the portion size is important, but the biggest issue is planning, having the time to think about the week ahead, not buying too much, and then thinking about portion sizes as well is a critical issue during the cooking part. And there are probably some ways to reduce trim a little bit, but I think the big issues there are planning, portion size. Those are the key issues in the household.
We talk about education, and it's by far the most important thing in a program like this. It'll never stop. It'll be continual, and it'll always evolve to fit, you know, the needs of our current system. But, I mean, we could have all the logistical, you know, processes in place, but if we don't have education from a consumer standpoint or a restaurant standpoint, it's going to be contaminated, and it won't be able to go to a composting facility. So it doesn't matter if we have all the trucks in the world. If we do not educate in the proper way, it won't matter.
And, you know, part of education is what you've learned growing up. I mean, I learned from my own mother. She had to cook for six kids. You know, you really look at prices. You really look at you buying for an entire week and make sure that what you buy, you can feed. And I think so I learned it from her. But if you don't have anyone who really practiced that, or if you were a family that goes out to restaurants all the time, how do you even learn these types of things, you know?
Yeah. In the developed world, it's consumers are the biggest issue with food waste. If you go to the developing world, it's flipped all around. It's early portions of the food supply chain that are the issue. And because most people are very economically insecure in some of these areas, there's very little food waste, just like during war and depression eras in the U.S. I think Terry Gross on her show yesterday had somebody looking at the home economics movement of the depression era in the U.S. You know, waste wasn't an issue because people were thinking critically about their own household budget.
Well, I feel like it's a generational skill that's sort of been lost. Like
yes.
Preserving and canning. I love it when I have friends over because I garden a lot and they see me canning and they're like, what the heck are you doing over here? Who is this person? And you know, it's sort of nice to have and come back. And when people see that, it shows you really care, you know, and things like that. But I just feel like that used to happen maybe in my grandparents' home. And I don't recall doing it because food was so accessible. And
right.
It was right around the time when fast food and takeout, and it just went away. And I really feel, and I start to see it even in the community that I live, that it's coming back. And that's a really nice thing to see.
And I hope you're right, Mike. Here's an email from Michael. He says, you're talking about three different issues that require different strategies. One, food waste. Two, food insecurity. Three, waste on the farm. These issues are separate but can eventually be merged. Do you agree with that?
Well, I want to jump in and say, I might have misspoken earlier. I don't call it food waste. There is no waste. It can always be turned into something else. It's food scrap.
Okay.
I just want to just put that out there because there's a lot of, it could be animal feed, it could be compost, it could be turned into soil. You know, I mean, it's not waste.
But there are people that are wasting it.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, well said.
but you all think, you agree that these are separate issues? Are they being tackled, or Brian, are they being tackled separately?
They're brought together by market forces. So if you waste at the farm level, there's less food to go up the supply chain. So that means prices are going to be higher because there's simply less food. That means people who are hungry are going to face higher prices typically when they go to the store. And then if you waste in the household, I forget the other place that was being mentioned, then that means communities have to spend more money to put their food waste in landfills, whether they, if they didn't have to, you know, taxes might be a little bit lower because they're paying less to put into the landfill. And so tax burden would change. So they're all related by the market, but they are separate parts of that that all come together and confluence through the market system here.
And Kyle, do you see people working together to achieve all those things?
They are. And I think it's really been more present, you know, over the past even 2 to 3 years, this topic of food waste, ever since the UN set global goals to reduce food waste by 50% by 2030, which was quickly adopted by the US EPA and the USDA. And since then, I mean, as Brian's saying, all throughout the food chain, really have been coming together, looking at the types of infrastructure, the policy, the impacts, and how people can work throughout that value chain together to address this issue. So it is much more present today, and I think we're making advances every day to address the topic.
Well, look at all of us three right here. We have an academic, we have a policymaker, and we have an entrepreneur, and it's these same people that have to be in a room together to make, you know, significant change and lasting change, because we all have different goals, wants, and needs out of And what we define as success as, you know, that's how I feel, especially with a program like this. My success like this would be obviously to divert organic waste. That's number one. But since I run a business, it's also to make money and employ people. You know, here's doing a study for, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I mean, we all have different things. And to all be here together is such a great start. I love being here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mike. We're glad you're here too. But Mike, this conference coming up ought to be one of those initial steps that hopefully grows bigger with more people involved, legislators, even policymakers, as much as sometimes we don't want legislation, maybe some of that would be needed.
Exactly. And there are municipalities and cities throughout the U.S. who are trying different approaches. We talked briefly about Seattle's attempt to tax and fine for food waste. Others are just doing studies. Nashville's doing a study. New York City's done a study. There are many areas just trying to get up and on the ground to get things going, get things moving in the right direction so that it can be addressed.
That's all the time we have. Mike, I feel like we need a big hug here after you.
You're bringing us together.
We're bringing it together. Yeah. Thanks to Brian Rowe. He's McCormick Professor of Agriculture, Marketing, and Policy for the College of Food, Agriculture, and Environmental Sciences at Ohio State University. Thank you, Brian. Michael Minnick, the Principal and Chief Consultant of Good Land Sustainability in Columbus, and Kyle O'Keefe, Director of Innovation and Programs for the Solid Waste Authority of Central Ohio. Thank you all.
Thank you, Ann.
And thanks for listening. I'm Gail Hogan. It's All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.